Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Rogue Angel by Alex Archer. Rogue Angel 29, False Horizon. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Thomas Penny, Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, M.B. Van Dorn, Stephen Carpenter, James Lewis, Alyssa Wilmoth, David Coyne, and Richard Rowan.
Nepal was one of the places in the world where Anya Creed felt that the line between fantasy and reality grew very thin. Its relatively modern city, Kathmandu, still harbored enclaves of the old world, where the lines between Buddhist, Taoist, and Hindu religions intersected, and the Mongols of the north fell down upon their southern neighbors. And most imposing, the massive Himalayan mountain range shadowed the entire region with its sheer magnitude and incredible stillness and tranquility. In Kathmandu, rickshaws still peppered the streets, pulled by wiry little men intent on earning enough money to feed their families. Dust filled the air, and gasoline fumes tainted every breath. Masses of eyes watched every happening on the crowded streets. While Nepal was ostensibly a monarchy, it also shared a border with Tibet and China beyond that. As such, intelligence services from around the globe plied their cloak-and-dagger trade in the shadows and overhangs of the city. Paid informants kept track of their various targets, and Anya knew it would be almost impossible to lose any surveillance she might pick up. Not that she expected to be followed. Her purpose for being in the capital city was one of pure adventure and not some underhanded government operation, and she felt excited about the prospect of finding the target of her quest. She journeyed from her home in New York at the behest of Professor Mike Tingley, head of the Ancient Religions Department at Charles Gate University. He'd emailed Anya and asked her if she might be interested in accompanying him on his trip. When Anya saw where he was headed, she immediately made plans for a personal leave from hosting her cable television show, Chasing History's Monsters, and started planning in earnest. The flight over from New York City to the first waypoint in Osaka, Japan, took 12 hours. Anya used the time to research as much about their quest as was possible. The connecting flight put her in Kathmandu the next day.
Taxi!
Tamil.
I can't drive in Tamil. Street's too narrow. You need to take a rickshaw.
Here's a 20. Take me as far as you can and I'll get along the rest of the way.
Ah, dollar not good anymore. America economy bad?
How about 40?
Now it's good.
Anya took in the smells of Kathmandu. The combination of diesel fumes and sewage made her nose crinkle, but only for a moment. She remembered the scent and knew it was only a matter of time before she grew used to it. Nothing had changed. The city still looked the same.
As far as I go, Tamil's a few blocks farther down.
Thanks.
Anya dragged her bag out behind her. In all the years that she'd been traipsing across the globe, she'd mastered the science of packing light. She had a few key articles of clothing that could be combined into an endless array of outfits. That, plus her laptop computer and a credit card for quick purchases, helped her feel at ease with just a backpack. As Anya entered the enclave via a narrow street, she caught sight of a rickshaw driver staring at her. She knew she was probably quite exotic-looking to the people of Nepal, with her height, her long, thick chestnut hair, and ambergreen eyes. She didn't feel beautiful, especially not after the long flight. But people had commented on her looks enough that she accepted that many considered her to be very attractive, even if she wasn't comfortable with it. She wanted a hot shower and a good night's sleep. But first, she had to meet with Mike. In his last email, he'd told Anya where to find him. He wanted to meet in the place they'd enjoyed so much the last time Anya had been here, a small American eatery called Blue Note. It was the one place in Kathmandu that Mike could find his favorite meal of all time, a cheeseburger and a cold beer. Anya spotted the faded blue sign through the dusty air and smiled. The owner refused to slap a fresh coat of paint on the building, preferring to keep an understated profile. A gaggle of American faces turned toward her. She could pick out the mountaineers among them. They were eagerly poring over maps and studying the best routes that would take them in sight of Mount Everest. But the Blue Note attracted its fair share of surly characters as well. She spotted two unshaven hulks of muscle eyeballing her from across the bar. Then she smiled as she saw who she was looking for.
Hey, Anya, over here.
Mike Tingley more closely resembled a linebacker than a professor of obscure religions. He'd gone to college on a football scholarship and had refused to stop exercising as his years advanced. Almost 45, Mike could easily bench over 300 pounds, and his presence was more than enough to belay any hostility.
See, you made it safely. You look amazing.
Cut it out. You know I just crawled off a plane after almost a full day in the air.
Then grab a chair. I'm sure you've got questions.
The question is, do you have answers?
First things first. You want a burger?
Judging by the crumbs left on your plate, you don't have much to share.
You know I can't resist this place. And I'm only allowed two. Doctor's orders. Seems like the cholesterol's starting to catch up with me.
Yeah, a lot of people suffer from high cholesterol. Can't you go on statins or something? What are all those pharmaceutical ads I keep seeing during my dinner time back in the States?
I'm on the statins, yeah. But even with them, I've got to make some major changes to my diet or else I'm history.
Mike, you're as strong as an ox.
And nursing a cholesterol count of nearly 300. Fitness isn't all of the picture, apparently.
Then I guess you'd better store up on the burgers while we're here, huh? I'm okay for now, in any case.
You say so. Thanks for making the trip over, Anya.
I'm happy to be here again. It's been too long since we've worked together. Thanks for asking me to come along.
So, what do you think of my plan?
At first, I wasn't sure what to think. I mean, what you're proposing has been mulled over and even searched for so long that most people consider it a pure fantasy. Or that it must have been destroyed many, many centuries ago.
And that's what makes this so exciting. Because I'm positive that everyone else has been searching in the entirely wrong part of this country for it. Everyone's been wrong.
Except for you. Imagine that.
Well, I might be wrong too. I guess we won't know for sure until we actually get out there and find it.
What made you think you could even find the place anyway?
It's been a hobby of mine ever since I read the book that first described it in detail.
But Lost Horizon was a work of fiction. No one really believed that, did they?
Plenty of people did. And plenty of them thought they were going to find it. As recently as a few years ago, there were still exploration teams making concerted efforts to locate it. But no one has ever succeeded.
Until now.
You're always the optimist, Anya. That's what I love about you.
Plus, I'm the only friend of yours who's crazy enough to actually fly across the globe to be a part of this.
There's that, too. But if nothing else, at least we'll have a fun time of it.
Oh, Shangri-La. It's incredible to think that in this day and age, a place supposedly so mystical and fantastic could even exist.
Well, what it is open to speculation. I never really bought into the notion that it was some incredible utopia. It's more the idea of the place that draws me in. That prospect of finding an untouched bit of geography that has been able to keep itself from becoming as molested as the rest of the planet, that's a pretty potent lure for me.
And what happens if we do find it? What then?
I'm in academia. You know the golden rule.
Publish or die.
Exactly.
But won't that mean exposing the place to the horrors of modern society?
I suppose it would, but I guess it depends on what we uncover when we find it.
If we find it.
Listen, if you can help me find Shangri-La, then that will be better than any amount of these delicious, incredible burgers.
You've got all the help you need. What's the plan?
Well, my first order of business is ordering another burger.
I thought you said you'd had your fill.
Well, yeah, but that was 5 minutes ago. I'm hungry again.
Anya caught a flash of movement out of the corner of her eye. The surly twosome who had eyeballed her when she'd entered the bar were maneuvering closer to where she sat. Anya allowed her eyes to pass over them as she casually scanned the bar. Nothing about them sparked any memories. Not that that meant anything. She had been around the world enough and on too many adventures to know everyone she might have angered. The list of people who wanted her dead was probably a long one. But she hadn't told anyone the details of her trip. And she thought the idea that someone would know she was coming was a bit far-fetched. So if the two guys eyeing her weren't there for her, then were they there for Mike?
Say, Mike?
Yeah?
You aren't in any trouble by any chance, are you?
Me? No. Why?
Because we're about to have guests.
From deep within the recesses of the crumbling brick facade across the street, a small Nepali man known as Tuk watched the restaurant with little more than a bored expression that echoed the blandness he felt inside. He was being well paid to watch the strange and beautiful woman he'd followed from the airport, but he knew nothing as to the reason. But Tuk had learned a few important things in his life as an orphan outcast, one of which was simple. When a foreigner offers you money to watch and do little else, it is smart to accept the generous offer. Tuk got a whiff of cigarette smoke on the wind, hidden just a little by the pervasive gas fumes. His eyes moved in their sockets, but did little else. As far as Tuk knew, no one could see him, ensconced as he was in the depth of shadows amid the twilight. His stature made him perfectly suited for the role of surveillance. He was thin, almost wiry, yet possessed strength in his frame. He moved quickly and could easily pass through crowds like a soft breeze, and no one would ever be the wiser. Tuk had come to Kathmandu as a child. He had little memory of his life before that. All he knew was that he had no one. He assumed his family had either abandoned him or they'd been killed in an avalanche, perhaps. Tuk had wandered down the river valleys and shallow hills of the mountain ranges until his feet carried him to the outskirts of Kathmandu. From there, he managed to scrape out an existence, although it was only such by the barest of measure. As the desperate so often do, he developed a keen eye for opportunities. In his youth, he worked to become an expert guide on the city streets for foreigners who came to this land seeking to ascend to the heavens. As he grew older, Tuk's ability to navigate unseen led him to another class of foreigner with little interest in the mountains themselves, aside from what lay across their snowy peaks. By the time Tuk finally understood that he held a certain amount of value to the various intelligence services that employed him, he was already deep within the community as a tracker. At first, representatives from several organizations had offered him full-time appointments, but Tuk had shrugged them off. He thought his best chance of prospering lay not in the fold of one nation's spies, but in the community as a whole. He would hire himself out to whoever could afford his fee, which grew with each passing year. As the years advanced, however, Tuk found himself being replaced with sophisticated electronic tracking systems. Gradually, his former clients opted for their tiny microchips and circuit boards over the wiry man they'd relied on for so long. And Tuk found his fortunes fading away, but not entirely. Every now and again, someone would still seek him out. But his espionage days were over. His new clients were less patient people. Drug runners, arms dealers, and other like folk used Tuk because it was cheaper than buying the technology to do the work. And Tuk, ever the adaptable sort, was forced to lower his own personal standards and accept the work. He hated it for the most part. Just being in contact with the clients made him feel dirty and his soul unclean. Tuk would only tolerate their presence for so long, Enough time to get the details of the job and the payment for his services at the completion. He'd had to give up the respect he'd once enjoyed from the spies. In him, they'd seen a fellow craftsman. Took had worked hard to nurture his talent, and they understood that. Despite the fact that he worked for no country but himself, they all treated him like one of their own. And Took had enjoyed that feeling of belonging. The men he worked for now cared little about his talent unless it produced results. More so, they treated Took like an insignificant mosquito that they barely found tolerable. They all had insulting nicknames for him and tossed his payment at him whenever they were finished. Took was seriously considering leaving Kathmandu and moving out into the countryside. He had a little money left, stashed away in a variety of hiding places in the city, so utterly obscure that he was certain no one knew where they were. He could use that money to set himself up in a small house. Perhaps he would become a farmer. He imagined life, looking out at the vastness of the enormous mountains each day, would be calm and enjoyable. Even as he had toiled in the narrow streets of Kathmandu, Took had always felt drawn to the countryside. He'd come from somewhere out there, and he knew deep in his heart that someday he would return. The previous day had started like any other. He left the tiny apartment he rented and made his way to find breakfast. His sixth sense told him that there was someone watching him. At first, he was worried that one of the drug runners was going to kill him, but he disregarded that notion. Ever since he had started dealing with criminals, he'd taken extreme caution in how he worked his way back home each night. He used routes that doubled back on themselves. Took was sure that none of them would be able to track him. Perhaps someone from his earlier life was stalking him. The prospect of that puzzled and thrilled him at the same time. He was puzzled because, in all his years, he'd never done anything to betray the confidences of whomever he worked for. He'd never done anything to warrant someone wanting to kill him. And in that confidence, Took felt his heart soar. Perhaps, just perhaps, they were coming back to him for work. Maybe their fancy gadgets couldn't do what Took could do. Sure, he was older now, but he still had vitality flowing in his veins. He could still complete their assignments with ease. Glancing back over his shoulder, Took saw nothing suspicious. He frowned and shook his head for being such a hopeful fool. He was getting old, he thought, and his desire for his former life had made him think that a return was possible when it was not.
Those spies are long gone, and they're not coming back.
Excuse me.
Took was startled by the size of the man suddenly standing next to him. He loomed large over Took, leaving him in the man's shadow. But while there was no doubt that the man was both imposing and ominous, there seemed no threat directed at Took. If anything, Took felt that the man might even respect him a little.
Are you Took?
Yes, I am he.
I would like to ask for your assistance in a small matter I have to deal with. And I will pay you very well for your services. Say, twice the rate you used to obtain from the British.
That would make me very happy indeed.
I was certain it would. Walk with me and I shall tell you of the matter. She will come from America. A young woman in her 20s. Dark hair that flows down past her shoulders. She is lithe, quick, and in battle she is a most formidable opponent.
I won't fight her.
I should hope you won't. But have little doubt that if she spots you, then she will make every effort to find out why you are following her. And she can be most persuasive.
She will not see me.
Indeed. And that is exactly the reason I have come to you, my friend. I know of your reputation. I know of your skill. This is not a matter to be entrusted to a faceless bit of technology, but rather to an expert such as yourself. This is her.
I will follow this woman from the moment she leaves the plane until such time as you wish me to stop. And never will she be the wiser.
Excellent. Excellent. Take half of the payment now for your trouble.
Trouble?
You are used to never being seen, and yet here you are walking down the street with me. And I tend to attract attention despite my best efforts. I am therefore ruining your usual cloak of invisibility. For that, I sincerely apologize.
You are not troubling me in the least. Had you not employed me, I might again find myself needing to find a job with a lower class of person, one I do not wish to seek out. But circumstances have dictated that I do just that in order to survive.
The realities of life do not tolerate the whims of our hearts, do they?
Not often.
Take this assignment, and I will triple your payment. I know the pain of working with idiots. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone.
Your generosity is most appreciated.
As is your discretion and your talent.
What would you have me do once I pick up the trail?
Nothing. You do absolutely nothing except follow her. For you to attempt otherwise would be suicidal.
As you wish.
She will most likely head to Tamil.
What makes you say that?
That is where all foreigners tend to go, isn't it? And this woman is adept at blending in with the surrounding scenery.
I won't let that fact enable any assumptions on my part.
I know this. Thank you for your help.
How will I know where to find you?
Take this phone. Press and hold the two and it will ring to my phone. Tell me where you are and I will be there. The phone is set to vibrate. If I call you and you do not answer, I will assume you are unable to talk at that moment for fear of giving your position away. However, I will expect a return call as soon as you are able.
Understood.
Then we are in business.
One last question, if I may?
Yes?
How did you find me?
You are a rarity in this part of the world, my friend, but not so in other places. In every city and town, there are those who know it better than anyone else. I only needed to take my time, and you revealed yourself when the universe judged the time right.
I'm glad to be of service.
As am I.
I know better than to ask your name. But what about the woman? What is she called?
Her name is Anya Creed.
Outside the Blue Note, Took wondered what exactly such a woman might be doing in order to attract the intense scrutiny of the man who now employed him. She seemed ordinary enough, albeit skilled at movement through crowds. Took had trailed her on a motorbike from the airport, and when she'd given up the taxi, he had parked and followed her on foot.
Yes?
You have her?
It is as you said. She is in Tamil, at a restaurant called the Blue Note.
Keep watching her.
You're coming here?
Not yet, but I will soon.
Anya was oblivious to the little Nepali man stationed outside with orders to report on her movements. She had other things to consider just then, like exactly how she was going to deal with the two men heading toward her table. She glanced at Mike and then back at the hulking masses in front of her. They both stopped short of coming within range of a swift kick from Anya's boots. That meant they had a situational awareness Anya recognized, marking them as seasoned professionals.
Hi, Mike. How you been?
I don't know you.
Sure you do. You know our employer, Mr. Singh. So if you know him, then you know us.
Who is Mr. Singh?
A miserable bastard, apparently. Why are you bothering me about this now? I told Singh I needed a few more weeks to pay him back.
Pay him back? What are you paying him back? What do you need money for?
He wanted to buy a map. A $50,000 map.
50 grand? What kind of map costs that much money?
You see? That's exactly what Mr. Singh would like to ask our friend Mike here.
Since when does Singh care what his money is used for as long as he gets repaid?
Since he found out you were blowing 50 large on a map. Now, you can come along with us quietly and without any trouble, or we can beat you senseless and then take you to Mr. Singh. Makes no difference to us.
Suppose we don't feel like seeing Mr. Singh just now. What about you guys go back to him and say you couldn't find Mike?
Well, we already told him we had you two in sight. Now, he's very interested in seeing Mike, and apparently he's very interested in meeting you. Says he loves your show.
How'd you know who I was?
Oh, we have ways of finding out who is on airline manifests. It comes in handy for Mr. Singh to know when he has business associates coming to town, or other people that he's interested in meeting.
Great. A fan. That's just what I need right now. When were you going to tell me about this, Mike?
I was hoping I wouldn't have to. Singh told me I had all the time I needed to pay him back. This is as much a surprise to me as it is to you.
50 grand? That must be some map.
Oh, it is.
So, are you coming with us? Or do we have to drag you out of here?
Fine. We'll go with you to see what Singh has to say. I like this place too much to cause trouble in here anyway.
Smart. I'm sure he won't keep you long. This is more of a social call than a collection call.
What a relief.
The two men led them out of the Blue Note. Anya looked around, but saw little chance for action. Throngs of people filled the streets of Tommel, and the two henchmen bracketed Mike and Anya between them. The tide of the foot traffic carried them along.
Don't worry, I can handle Singh.
Can you?
Sure, he's a businessman. The last thing he wants is to spill any blood. He'd much rather make money.
And the map?
I believe it shows the true route to finding Shangri-La.
Where'd you get it?
An archivist for James Hilton.
You mean the same James Hilton who wrote Lost Horizon?
The same.
But most people who read that book believed that Hilton based it on Hunza Valley in Pakistan.
Yep. And others think it's actually in the Kunlun mountain range. But neither of those suppositions is correct.
And this map shows the way?
It's true that Hilton visited Pakistan, and particularly the Hunza Valley, only a few years before Lost Horizon was published. But as for him basing the book on the area, that's rubbish. Hilton knew what he'd discovered and didn't wish for it to be torn apart by the curious.
Anya saw the henchmen were steering them down a street with less traffic. It was lined by cell phone shops and a few nice restaurants. They were on the outskirts of Tommel now. Ahead of them, more modern buildings loomed.
So Hilton lied?
Yes. Throughout the early 20th century and into the 1930s, there were many British explorers over in this region. It was a natural place to go to, given the British Empire's India connection. Hilton and others like him made trips up to this part of the world and were fascinated by what they saw and perceived as both mystical and wondrous places.
So, if neither the Hunza Valley nor the Kunlun Mountains are the location, then where would it be?
That's what the map will tell us. But we need to get away from Singh and his goons if we have any hope of discovering it.
Seems like Singh is going to have a problem with that.
Who cares?
I'm not exactly thrilled at the idea of spending this entire trip being hunted by the likes of these two. And Singh doesn't sound like he's the forgiving type.
He's not.
So suppose we see what he has to say before we decide to go about this in a different way.
But if we decide to go that way?
Then it won't be a problem.
Good.
And hold up.
The four stood in front of a 4-star hotel. From the circular roundabout, lush green plants shot skyward in front of the plate glass windows. Several limousines were parked in front.
He lives in a hotel?
Top floor is a penthouse. But even still, we won't tolerate any monkeying around here. Mr. Singh owns the hotel and doesn't want his guests disturbed.
Ever the gracious host.
You'll find out soon enough. Walk into the lobby and head for the elevators. Oh, and remember, we're right behind you.
In any other part of the world, they might well have appeared underdressed, given the immediate environment of the hotel lobby. But in Kathmandu, they looked like any other well-heeled adventurous couple. And no one paid any attention. The goateed man produced a special key from his pocket, inserting it in a lock beneath the floor buttons. Mirrored panels on the inside of the doors cast their reflections back. The huge men faced Anya and Mike.
Won't be long now. Mr. Singh has just finished another business meeting, so I don't think you'll have to wait. Out.
Anya and Mike stepped onto a plush red carpet. The dim light made her squint to make out the massive pair of oak doors in front of her.
Mr. Singh has an aversion to bright lights. He prefers the level of illumination always be kept dim to save his eyesight.
You guys wear night vision in here. It's ridiculous how little I can see.
It doesn't seem to bother Mr. Singh.
Well, as long as there's that. Have you been here before, Mike?
Nope. My meetings with Singh always took place at his restaurant.
Mr. Singh uses the hotel for his most important meetings.
Guess I didn't rate.
Apparently.
Behave yourselves when you go in.
I'll be on my best behavior.
Enter.
Inside, the gloom was even deeper than in the hallway. Anya could smell incense wafting from inside. As the henchmen led them into a large entry hall, Anya identified a form standing beside the door. She could just barely make it out as belonging to a woman. Inside, the windows were open to the night air. Far below, Anya caught glints of the lights of the city twinkling around them.
Anya Creed.
Before Anya stood a thin rail of a man with heavy folds surrounding his eyes, but they gleamed with an almost imperceptibly acute sense of sight, despite the relative darkness.
You must be Mr. Singh.
I am.
Nice to meet you.
Singh grabbed her hand, and then Anya felt the leathery touch of his lips on the back of it. There was the briefest flicker of moisture, and she realized that he'd licked her skin. She resisted the urge to recoil and kill the little cretin.
Mike, how very nice to see you again.
Rather soon, wouldn't you say?
Well, we have much to discuss. After all, our former arrangement seems hardly fair given the fact that I had no knowledge of what you intended to do with the money I provided.
What do you care what I do with it?
I care very much what my money goes toward. Especially so if it appears I might make even more on a business proposition than what I first expected.
We have an arrangement already. There's no need to discuss this any further.
That's where you're wrong, Michael. The underlying tenant of my business, one that you sought out of your own free will, I might mention, is that as the primary shareholder in your life, I can make and remake any arrangements as I see fit.
And if I don't like the new parameters of the deal?
I truly hope it won't come to that.
Anya saw a flash as the bulk of a body tumbled past the windows. In her mind, Anya could envision the body hitting the street far below and shuddered at the vision.
I'm sorry you had to see that. Another of my business partners saw fit to dispute my attempts at a more equitable financing arrangement.
So you killed him?
I believe it will be ruled a suicide. But come in. Let us sit down and see if we might avoid any such unpleasantries. I'm very interested in hearing what you both have to say.
Took watched the hotel from beneath the overhang of a small electronics boutique that specialized in global positioning systems and cell phones. He had trailed Anya and the men with her to this hotel with very little effort. When they'd emerged from the Blue Note, it had been an elementary matter to ease into the traffic slipstream and follow them to this destination. But Took was not happy. As the party had exited the Blue Note, his weathered face had creased and then flushed. He knew the men who escorted Anya Creed. The heavyset man with the goatee was known as Burton, and the other man was called Kurtz. They were two of the worst enforcers working for Kathmandu's most illustrious crime syndicate, run by Mr. Tsing. Took had worked for Tsing in the past, when his personal circumstances had forced him to take jobs from such despicable people. Tsing's treatment of Took bordered on abusive, and after he had withheld part of Took's payment, the small man resolved never to work for him again. Personal finances be damned. Burton and Kurtz had especially insulted him by tossing him out of his last meeting with Tsing and threatening to kill him if he ever showed his face around there again. Took thought about the miniature folding kukri he carried in his pocket and how he would dearly love to use the knife to end Singh's life and that of both Burton and Kurtz if he was given half a chance to do so. He never used to carry a weapon, preferring instead to rely upon his natural stealth abilities to remove him from harm. When he worked for spies, there was never much danger to him. But working with criminals meant constant danger, so Took had taken to carrying a smaller version of the curved blade favored by the Gurkhas, the famed Nepali warriors who often served in the British Army. Why was Anya Creed meeting with Singh? And just who was the other man with her that Took did not recognize? If he read the body language right, and he felt that he did, then Anya and the other man were not accompanying Burton and Kurtz willingly. Took also thought it doubtful that in the short span of time since Anya had left the airport, that she had somehow managed to run afoul of Tsing. That meant the other man must have been responsible. But how? Tsing specialized in any manner of criminal enterprises, but drugs, prostitution, and extortion were his favorites. Less lucrative was the loan sharking, But Took nodded to himself. Perhaps that was it. If the man was in debt to Tsing, then this would not end well. Did that also mean that Anya Creed was in danger? Took slid the small cell phone from his pocket.
Yes?
Your woman, Anya Creed, is at the Fairbanks Hotel.
All right.
She was brought there under duress.
You're certain of this?
The man she was with worked for a man named Tsing. He has a penthouse. He is a worthless criminal who enjoys seeing people suffer.
You have history with him?
Yes.
I would have thought it foolish for anyone to cross you.
I appreciate your saying that, but it has happened ever since my lack of work with my former employers.
Understood. And you say Tsing has the uppermost floor to himself?
It is my understanding that he lives there, yes.
You've been inside?
Never.
I need to know what is going on. Is it possible for you to get inside?
I'm known to Tsing and his men.
I realize this is asking more than you are normally tasked with, but I will make sure you are properly compensated for your efforts. If you can get inside and make sure that Anya Creed is safe, I will pay you an additional 50% of your fee.
Took's heart raced. With that much money, he could easily leave this life behind and retire out in the countryside. It was too good not to take the chance. And if he happened to get a shot at Burton or Kurtz, perhaps he could exact a small measure of revenge on them.
Make sure no one sees you. It is absolutely vital that Anya Creed not know you are watching her. She's incredibly intelligent. Any hint of your involvement will inevitably cause her to start reasoning out my existence in this matter. And at this moment, I cannot afford for her to know I am here. Do you understand?
Perfectly.
Somebody call an ambulance!
What was that?
If I know the man, and I do, it would appear that Tsing just had someone thrown off the roof of the hotel.
A woman?
No, it was a man.
The same man who accompanied Anya Creed into the hotel?
I don't know. It could have been, I suppose, but in the darkness I cannot tell.
She could be in danger. It's vital you determine whether she is or not. If you think her life is in jeopardy, you must call me back as soon as possible.
I understand.
Took slid across the street. As he came abreast of the circular drive leading up to the hotel entrance, he paused near the bloody, mangled heap that was the body of the man who had just fallen. Took looked him over and saw that the pants were not the same color as those worn by the man who had accompanied Anya Creed. That was good news. Took needed to avoid drawing attention. He turned back towards the lobby and spotted a bellhop dragging a luggage cart behind him. Gaining access to Tsing's penthouse required a special key in the elevator. Took had no such key. That meant he would be forced to take the stairs. He pressed the elevator's topmost floor button, holding it down to cause the elevator to run express to his destination. He regarded himself in the mirrored doors and smiled. All that money. It would be his if he could just live long enough to see this assignment finished. As the numbers flashed by, Took thought about the relative peace he would soon enjoy. Long walks would be the greatest exertion he would face, but otherwise he would leave behind all the congestion and urban decay, and he would be immensely grateful for it. Took looked out to either side, but he saw no one else in the hallway. Down the hall, he saw the exit sign for the stairwell and headed for it. He hoped that it would also go up to the penthouse and roof. Surely, Tsing's men had used it to throw their unlucky prisoner over the top. Took would use it to gain access to the penthouse floor. He spotted an unmarked door. This was the penthouse level. A small amount of space showed under the door, and Took got down on his knees and bent his face until he could see under the crack. He let his eyesight adjust to the darkness on the other side. As far as he could tell, there was no one in the penthouse hallway. Took could smell the incense that Tsing always insisted be kept burning. Took's nostrils flared in disgust. He hated everything about Tsing, and his preference for incense and anything vaguely mystical was in direct contrast to his barbaric ways. He faded into the shadows near a potted giant fern next to the massive oak doors and sidled up as close as he dared to the main entryway. This would make for a decent observation post. How long would he need to stay, though? The man on the phone had told him to make sure Anya Creed was safe. But how could he do that if he was out here? Took listened at the door in vain. The heavy wood barred any sound from passing through it. And unlike the stairwell door, there was no such space at the bottom of the entry doors to the penthouse. Took realized with a start that he would have to enter the penthouse itself. He examined the door in front of him. There would be people inside. At least five, he reasoned. Singh, Burton, Kurtz, Anya Creed, and the other man. There might even be more. Took examined the lock. He could force his way in, he supposed, but that would simply alert everyone to his presence. And the man on the phone had been most insistent that he remain utterly invisible to Anya Creed. Took wasn't sure how the woman would be able to link Took's presence with the man on the phone, but he knew enough not to question such things. If the man on the phone demanded that Took remain invisible, then that was exactly what Took would have to do. But how? Took barely had time to slide back behind the large fronds. A solitary figure swept out toward the elevator bank. A woman, dressed in a long Mandarin-style dress with a slit running up its side, revealed a brief flash of skin as she passed the giant fern. In the light of the elevator, Took could see the sharp lines of her Han ancestry. She had the look of lethal beauty about her. Took bolted from behind the fern. The hydraulic spring on the door gave Took just the opportunity he needed. He stepped into the penthouse. Took moved to the hall table and sank down to his knees. It was essential he give himself enough time to thoroughly survey his new environment. If he moved too soon, he would risk being surprised by someone he hadn't noticed. But if he took too long, the woman might return at any moment and spot him.
Please, make yourselves comfortable.
Singh had ushered Anya and Mike into a grand living room. Anya could make out a large wraparound leather sofa that faced windows looking out over the city of Kathmandu. The pervasive scent of incense hung heavy over the entire penthouse, and Anya quickly realized that the sickly sweet smell was too cloying for her. Singh reclined on the farthest portion of the couch and pulled his feet up under him. Anya and Mike sat across from him.
I really don't want this to be an adversarial relationship. Everyone always makes out so much better when things are nice and civilized, don't you think?
Since when is tossing someone off a roof nice and civilized?
It's not. And it's a reminder that as cordial as I'm being right now, that mood can quickly turn. You'd do well to remember that.
Noted. Now what is this all about? Even if Mike did borrow money from you, he certainly hasn't reneged on that deal, has he?
No, he has not. And in fact, I fully expect him to repay me as he promised. But that's not really the issue. What this is about is what he used my money to purchase. And I know full well what it was.
What?
A map that shows the way to Shangri-La.
How did you find out?
You might say that I've had an almost obsessive interest in locating it for the majority of my life.
Really?
And I know what the rumors are and who has what for sale. As I said, my obsession with the place has led me to have quite the network of contacts.
If that's the case, then why didn't you just buy the map yourself before Mike came to you?
Sometimes people can be particular about who they happen to deal with. And I'm afraid that my reputation tends to precede me. I, of course, made overtures to purchase the map earlier, but the seller refused, saying that he would not do business with me.
I'm surprised he didn't end up taking a dive off the roof.
Violence is always a means to an end, but there are often better alternatives. If he would not sell to me, then it was merely a matter of arranging for someone else to buy it. In this case, I made sure that your friend Mike here found out about it.
You baited me?
As much as my reputation precedes me, so too does yours. You are one of the few professors who have not gone along with the more outlandish theories of where Shangri-La truly is. I have known of you for some time now. I've bided my time, waited. And when you learned about the map, I knew you would come here and seek to buy it.
But how did you know I'd come to you?
I know everything about your financial situation. There's little that cannot be accomplished with a few keystrokes these days. Even here in our rather remote portion of the world, we can still reach out and discover all we need to know. The map was too expensive for you, yet after you laid eyes on it, I knew you would need financing for it. But you wouldn't seek help from conventional means. After all, what if it turned out to be a ruse? You would become the laughingstock of your peers. No, you did exactly what I expected you to do. You came to me.
And you gave him the money?
Absolutely.
Knowing full well that he would buy the map with it?
Yes.
And then you would have what you needed?
Well, not quite. You see, I am bound by some rather perturbing aspects of my condition. I suffer from a skin ailment that prohibits me from going out into bright light. I dare say that I would make for a poor explorer. As such, the map is not as useful to me as it would be to someone else.
You used me, and now you want me to do your dirty work.
I want you to use the map to find the fabled location, and then report back to me here.
What do you hope to gain from that?
I am part optimist, and part fool believer. If the legends that surround Shangri-La are to be believed, then the place is a utopia of mystical qualities. I may, in fact, travel there by night and eventually find a cure for my condition.
I've known people who thought that they could find magical places before, and each time they've been sorely disappointed.
And what brings you over here on your creed? Is it just a promise of adventure with an old friend? Or is it something else?
What do you mean?
I mean nothing more than I asked. I have long enjoyed watching you on that delightful show. You have so much more presence than that other rather pitiable woman.
Thanks. I like keeping my clothes on, if that's what you mean.
But your reputation also precedes you, doesn't it?
I doubt it.
I know, for example, that you are an inherently dangerous woman.
Says who?
Says any number of witnesses to your rather adept fighting prowess. If rumors are to be believed, and I must admit I'm a bit of a sucker for such tales, then you have quite a formidable manner about you.
This is quite a nice place you've got, Mr. Singh. How is it you came to afford it?
Ah, trifling matter, not worth much discussion. I simply happened to make a great deal of money and invested in the right places. That's all.
And the government here? How is it you escape their attention?
As I mentioned before, violence is only one method to achieving a goal. It is useful at times, yes, but overall it's a deplorable thing to have to resort to. Often, better outcomes can be had if a little bit of leverage is applied.
And your proximity to Tibet probably doesn't hurt either, huh?
Are you driving at something?
Just a theory.
Care to share it?
Not a chance. So, you want Mike and me to find this place using the map he bought?
The map I bought? The money used was mine. I am the map's rightful owner. You may consider it a loan right now, but it belongs to me.
As you say. So we find this place and then what? We come back and tell you about it and that's it?
Yes.
And Mike's debt of the 50 grand?
Forgiven.
You're serious?
Absolutely. The map is mine and I paid for it. I want only what I cannot achieve on my own. You must locate the exact position of the fabled land and then come back to me. What I do from that point on is no longer any concern of yours. Any attempt to meddle with my affairs after that will be dealt with firmly, if you catch my meaning.
Perfectly.
Excellent. And just to make sure there are no hard feelings about all of this, I will even loan you the use of one of my smaller planes. It will, I have no doubt, be of tremendous help to you in your search.
I don't suppose it would do us any good to refuse your kind offer?
That would be tremendously disrespectful of you to do so. And really, I must insist that you use it. At least I know that you will be in good hands.
Seems as though we don't have any choice in the matter, does it?
Oh, you do have a choice. But I'm afraid the other option isn't nearly as enticing as the one I've put before you now.
What about Mike and his find? Does he get to tell the world that he found it?
And why would he want to do that? Solely for the purpose of self-gratification? I dare say it would be much better for such a place to remain a fabled legend, rather than be overrun with mobs of tourists who would no doubt ruin the magnificence of the place.
You're betting that it really is everything that the legends claim it to be. We might find it nothing more than a dried-up lake bed. It could have been demolished in an earthquake. There are any number of possibilities.
And I'm counting on you to discover exactly what happened. All I want is for you to report back to me as to what you find. If you do that, and then leave it to me, then we will have concluded our business. which I'm sure will make you a much happier man than you seem to be at the present time.
The sooner we get started, the better.
Shall we have a drink to celebrate our new arrangement? I have the most delicious peach wine.
I had a beer earlier. Probably not the best idea to mix them.
Mike?
I guess I'd better. I wouldn't want to be rude and refuse your kind offer.
Bring the wine, Burton.
Yes, sir, Mr. Singh.
I suppose you cannot be blamed for feeling a sense of betrayal, Mike. Although you are a bit naive to think that it would be a simple matter dealing with me.
I was stupid. I won't make the same mistake ever again. Trust me on that.
I do. You don't strike me as someone who suffers failure easily. I would be remiss if I didn't warn you that trying to double-cross me would be foolish.
I gave you my word, and I'll stick to it.
Burton handed a glass each to Singh and Mike. Despite Anya's earlier refusal, he presented her with one as well. She knew she was expected to drink. Singh raised his glass in a toast, smiling. Mike frowned, but raised his own, and Anya did the same. She put the glass to her lips. It smelled sweet. It didn't blend well with the cloying incense in the room, but she took a tentative sip.
Here's to a successful adventure, and an outcome we can all live with. Do you like it, Miss Creed?
It's different.
It's more of a dessert wine, I know, but I love it so. I can't imagine relegating it to such a minor role. I prefer it to stand on its own.
Pretty good.
Have another.
Anya let more of the wine slide down her throat. It seemed marginally thicker than the other wines she'd had in the past. She felt a warm glow come over her, and despite herself, she realized she liked the flavor.
This particular vintage comes from a winery down in the southern part of the country. I happen to own it, of course.
That must make for a nice discount on your personal supply.
It does indeed. Would you like another as well, Miss Creed?
I feel funny. Mike? Are you feeling... Mike!
I must compliment you on what I perceive to be a rather incredible constitution. Considering your friend is already unconscious, I hardly expected you to last a full glass.
Why?
But do not worry. I'm merely taking steps to ensure that you will do as you've promised. You won't be harmed. And tomorrow, you'll be on your way to finding the mystical kingdom of Shangri-La. For now, sleep well.
Let them sleep, and then deliver them to the FBI.
Took shrank away from the conversation. He had to get out of the penthouse before he was discovered. He slipped back toward the front door. He'd done what he'd been asked to do, and now it was time to get out of there and report back to the mysterious man who had hired him. Took barely had enough time to shrink into a shadowy recess before the woman in the Mandarin gown came gliding back into the penthouse. She froze. Her eyes swept around the darkened penthouse like lasers. Took averted his eyes from her. From experience, he knew that even glancing at someone could often trigger that primal awareness of being watched. But Took felt genuine fear. Something about the woman unnerved him. She was someone other than the house servant she appeared to be. He could sense power in her. She moved closer to where Took squatted, hidden by the darkness. His heart pounded inside his chest, and he willed it to slow, fearing she might even hear it. What was it about her that filled him with fear? How could she smell anything over the heavy mist of incense? Took marveled at her sense. She was completely attuned to her environment and knew something was out of order. She couldn't tell just then what it was, but her senses served her well. Her eyes seemed to pierce the darkness in front of her. The line of cold sweat that broke out along Took's spine almost made him start to move. He didn't think he'd ever experienced this kind of fear before, and in all of his years working with the intelligence community, he couldn't recall ever feeling anything like it. She knew he was there. Took felt certain of it. Her long fingernails looked like claws in the twilight. Took had little doubt they could effectively shred anyone she wanted. He realized that she reminded him of a feral cat that knows it has its prey cornered.
Mr. Singh wants you to clean up the wine glasses. Make sure you use hot water on them.
Took saw the woman blink, and in that instant, Took knew he was safe. Her concentration broken, she seemed to suddenly mask herself again in the guise of a servant. She bowed low, took one final look at Took's hiding place, and then slipped away. Took watched her turn a corner and vanish. This was Took's chance.
Were you successful?
Yes.
Tell me everything you heard and saw.
Took faithfully recounted the entire escapade, delving into detail about the conversation and then also about the mysterious woman in the apartment. The man on the phone seemed especially intrigued about her.
You said she seemed to know you were there.
Without a doubt, she knew I was there. In another moment, she might have killed me. Such was the fearing she gave me.
But when the man you called Burton came around the corner, she assumed the guise of a servant woman again?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Terrifying.
She is no doubt some type of plant on Singh. Of that we can be certain. But for what reason?
I don't know.
Where are you right at this moment?
I'm hidden across the street from the hotel entrance.
You said Singh's men will take them to the airfield?
Yes.
Is there a back entrance to the hotel they might opt to use instead of the front?
There is, but it leads only to an alley too small for a car to travel down. If they want to use a car to transport Anya Creed and her friend, they will need to come out the front entrance. That is my guess as well. I will stay with him all the way.
Good. I need to look a little bit further into the strange woman you spoke of just now. I want to know more about her and who she really is.
May I ask what your feeling is about her?
I'm not sure yet. But it may be assumed that she is no mere servant girl. She is obviously positioned close to Singh for some reason. But for what, I don't know.
She scared me. And I've never felt fear like that.
Now, I must decide what to do about this new wrinkle.
I do not envy you.
Just continue to make certain that Anya Creed stays safe. If Singh lives up to his word, then all should be fine. But I want you around just in case.
And if it appears that Burton and Kurtz mean them harm?
I don't wish to tell you how to handle that situation if you are not comfortable with it. However, my primary concern is that Anya Creed remains safe. As such, any steps you think wise to ensure that may be taken.
Understood.
Don't be in a hurry to exact vengeance on those who have wronged you, my friend. Act only if the situation calls for it. But if you must act, then do it swiftly and boldly. You must strike first and be without restraint in order to win the day.
I will.
Keep me informed of any developments.